You're listening to Pastor Bill Surjack.
This morning we're in Joshua, the second chapter, and I'll be reading the whole second chapter. So hear now the word of God. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim, go over to the land, he said, especially Jericho. So they went and entered the house of the prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab. Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, the men left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. But she had taken them up on the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that greater fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you to come out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites from the east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you, for the Lord your God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me that you will show kindness to my family, because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and my mother, my brothers and my sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Our lives for your lives, the men assured her. If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. Now she had said to them, go to the hills so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return, and then go on your way. The men said to her, this oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land you have tied the scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and unless you have brought your father and your mother, your brothers and all your family into your house. If anyone goes outside your house into the street, his blood will be on his own head. We will not be responsible. As for anyone who is in the house with you, his blood will be on our head if a hand is laid on him. If you tell what we are doing, we will be released from the oath you have made us swear. Agreed, she replied. Let it be as you say. So she went with them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. When they left, they went into the hills and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the river and returned without finding them. Then the two men started back, and they went down out of the hills, forded the river, and came to Joshua, son of Nun, and told him everything that had happened to them. They said to Joshua, the Lord has surely given this whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. Thank God that he has not left us alone to know what he is like, but he's revealed himself in a way that we can understand by becoming a man in the person of Christ. And that revelation is accurately obtained for us in this holy word. One of the things that I've always wondered about in this passage of the book of Joshua is why in the world Joshua sent out the spies. I guess the only reason you can say that he sent out the spies was because God had instructed him to do it. So he sent out the spies into the city of Jericho. And as I think about it, probably the only reason I can figure out why he must have sent the spies was so that they would meet Rahab, because they never were going to use their information. As a matter of fact, at best, they have a sketchy battle plan as to what they're going to be doing next. And so why in the world would they bother needing any extra information? God would tell them all that they would need. And as far as I can tell, the only reason was to be able to find Rahab. Because Rahab was different. As we talked about before, the people of this land worshipped Molech, who was the god of infant sacrifice. This was a horrible god that reflected his hard idea of goodness and evil on them so that they picked up this very negative idea of good and evil in the way they operated their lives. And so God had decided that he was going to destroy all the people of this land, except that one of them began to realize who he was, that he was the Lord, and who genuinely in her heart began to turn to him as God. And so God sent out two spies from Israel to meet with Rahab, this one lady who responded to him. And he wanted to make sure that she then had the opportunity to be spared and to become one of his people. And so the spies went into the land, and sure enough, she had heard about the power of God that was on the people of Israel. The people of that town were frightened with what the Israelites might be able to do. But they went to Rahab. And with Rahab, they began to find a response and gave her a plan of salvation, where if she did not turn them in, she would be able to be spared too, if she tied a scarlet cord around the window, or the rope that was around the window that she had let them over the wall. She too had to make some sort of response, and she did. She made an open witness, a declaration of God and what God was going to do. And she was spared. And not only was she spared, but her whole family was spared. That's an amazing story of the love of God. And it doesn't even just stop there. Rahab was not only spared at that time, but if you look through the lineage of Jesus, I think you'll find four women in the lineage of Jesus. And one of them is Rahab, the prostitute from Jericho, who was in this land where the people had totally gone away from God. So much so that God said he would destroy the people. That's one of the things to be able to show us, the tender caring of God, that he will find one person in the midst of maybe thousands who will not follow him and who will go away from him, but he will find the one person in the midst who will respond to him and go toward him. One of the other things that intrigues me, and I've been watching this as I've been looking into the book of Joshua, is how openly the Jews are depending upon God. The plans that they have are not particularly clever plans. Matter of fact, as far as I can figure out, the plan was basically to go in and possess the land. They didn't even have a good plan as far as getting across the Jordan River. But God had a plan for them. He dried up the waters to go into the Jordan River, just as he had dried out the waters of the Red Sea to come out of Egypt. And so they were able to go into the land and possess the land. But their plans were primarily plans that were dependent upon God. Without God, they would not have worked. There wasn't anything about the people that would cause the people of Jericho to be frightened of them. The Israelites didn't have a particularly powerful army. It wasn't that they had this incredibly good battle plan. It was just that the people of Jericho began to see the power of God at work in the Jews, and it frightened them. In the church, I think we very seldom depend upon the power of God for too much of anything. We usually make out our plans as to what we think will work, and our plans are usually based upon the things that have worked within the world structure already, the types of things that might work in the business world, the types of things that might work in the political world. And we basically take those same things and kind of adapt them to the church and then ask God to give his blessings on those things. And so when what we have done actually works out, and most people look around and say, well, you guys got some clever leaders. You figured out how to do it. And very seldom do people look around and say, boy, they could have never done that without the power of God. But you know, the only thing that made the Israelites powerful in the eyes of the people in the land was God working in their midst. We usually very seldom leave room for God to even work in our plans. We just sort of hope that he'll follow the way we decide to do things. It's interesting for me now, I'm at a point where I can kind of look back on 32 years of ministry here, and I start looking at things that maybe worked and things that maybe didn't work so well. One of the things that amazes me is a few of the things that worked really well came from brainstorming sessions where we decided what we were going to do. A few weeks ago, I was eating at the Huddle House in Culloway, and there was an older guy in there when I was at the counter. As he was leaving, he looked at me and he pointed and he said, "Ask Bill, right?" And I said, "You must have been around here for a while." He said, "Yeah." He said, "I used to listen to your radio show. Ask Bill was on, actually was on for 18 years, the local radio station." I was amazed how many people have remember me by that radio show. People in different churches around, different places will remember me by having been on the radio so long. You say, well, how in the world did that come about? Did we have a clever plan to be able to make that work? Well, actually, the way that started was Livingston Kelly and David Shulman and I used to have breakfast together on Fridays. David, he's Jewish, but he would ask me questions about the Christian faith. And I would respond to the questions as best I could. And David at that time owned a clothing store called David's. And he loved doing radio advertising. And he did a whole lot of advertising on the radio. And after a while, David said, "Why don't you do this on the radio?" And I said, "Well, I've never done anything on the radio before." He said, "It'll work. Do it." And so we did. I took it to the session. They decided that, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. A member in the church at that time gave a little extra money to get us started with it. And so we started doing a radio show of 18 years. And I think probably God had something to do with that. He put those things together. You know, as I look back more and more times, I see that kind of thing happening. Even when we started the building program, it wasn't that somebody came up with the idea that we ought to expand the building. I put up a little chart in the hallway in the back of the church before the expansion was done, showing what our average attendance had been over the past several years. And then I drew a line where the church was full. Some people started then talking about maybe we ought to expand the building. Lo and behold, some other people worked. I'm not very good at administering things, and other people who were good at that put that thing together, and we put a building together. I think that was ultimately God's work in the midst, and we sort of saw what he was doing, and we got on board with God's plans. Even recently, one of the things that I'm amazed at in our church is that we didn't have too many children for the children's sermon this morning, but most mornings we do. Not long ago, I added up the number of children under the age of 7 in our church, and we have 148 members in our church, and we have 24 children under the age of 7. I remember a few years ago, I would do the children's sermonette and no kids would come. And we tried a lot of different things to try to attract young couples to the church. And it seemed like almost God said, "When are you guys going to stop and let me do it?" We finally gave up on the things that we tried to do. Next thing we knew, when a couple came, then another, and more. And if somebody were to ask me, "How'd you get all those young couples in the church?" I would have to say, God did it. I don't know of any particular program that we did that made it happen, but God did it. As I look more and more back on things, I begin to see the stuff just came from God. The things that actually work and the things that actually make differences in people's lives do not come from our own ability. They come from the presence of God at work. And we need to trust him to be at work in our midst. And usually as we're just going about the business of telling people about Jesus, and helping them come to know him better, we begin to see where God is working. The people of Israel, on their own strength or their own abilities, the people of Jericho had these incredibly fortified walls. And there's no way in the world that they would have had any fear whatsoever of the people of Israel, except that they saw the power of God in their midst. It struck terror. Really today, sometimes churches make pronouncements for political stands and things like that, and very seldom does anybody pay much attention to it outside the church. because most people don't think of us as that powerful or that strong, and we aren't. We don't have that much money. We don't have that much cleverness. We don't have that much clout. But we have the power of God. And it is only when people begin to see the power of God at work in our lives that they begin to pay attention. And they begin to see us as significant. And maybe even begin to be a little awestruck, even a little fearsome of what we might say about what God has said. The people of Israel struck terror into the hearts of the people of the land, because the people of the land were not following God. They were going as far away from God as possible. And they saw what God did in the lives of the people who followed him. And that's a picture, I think, that should help us as we look at the way we put things together in the Church of Jesus Christ. We want to make sure that we don't leave God out. As a matter of fact, it would probably be a good idea if we made our plans with the idea that we're going to look stupid. We might even fail if God's not there, or if this plan is not God's plan. We look at the walls of Jericho, and I can't imagine following a more stupid plan than going around a city 7 times and blowing a horn. That was going to be the way God was going to conquer the city. I think we maybe need to put ourselves more and more in that kind of a situation, where if God doesn't actually do what he says, we're going to look pretty stupid. We're going to be out there marching around, blowing a horn. Nobody's going to know what in the world we're doing. But when we have the power of God, they will begin to see God at work in our midst.